And this is Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. The trade policies that replace NAFTA cannot be allowed to put the interests of multinational corporations first. As the renegotiation of NAFTA under a Trump administration teeming with corporate interest is positioned to do, we need an internationalist approach to trade that lifts up labor rights, environmental standards, and human rights for people in all of the nations involved in the agreement and provides good jobs for workers in the U.S. So the question is, how do we respond to Trump's nationalist hyperbole, which invariably allows corporations to pit U.S. workers against Mexico's or other countries' workers and working class interests in a global race to the bottom? Now, NAFTA renegotiation. Will working people continue to get shafted? We're joined by Lori Wallach, Director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, and Gisela Perez, lawyer and journalist who works at NGO Derechos Digitales and is a spokesperson for the coalition Mexico Against NAFTA, composed of more than 30 civil society organizations and trade unions. Lori, what really are the major talking points so that the global working class, if you will, does not get shafted?
NAFTA is effectively a deal that isn't much about trade, but that rather is largely about granting extraordinary rights and privileges to multinational corporations. Basically, the gist of what is necessary, perversely, to be able for Donald Trump to deliver on his promises to American workers, which was to stop the race to the bottom in wages and create jobs, is also what's necessary to make the deal work for working people in Mexico and Canada. And that is, namely, to get rid of the infamous investor state tribunals that allow multinational corporations to attack our laws in front of tribunals of three corporate attorneys who can order payment of unlimited taxpayer funds, including for the company's expected future profits, over any domestic labor, wage, environmental, health safeguard that they believe violates their corporate rights in NAFTA. Mexico and Canada have actually seen more of these attacks than even the U.S., and people in those countries have been hit hardest with those corporate attacks. Similarly, NAFTA banned the use of buy local procurement. So for communities in the U.S. and Mexico and Canada to be able to choose to reinvest their tax dollars into creating jobs locally, no, NAFTA forbids that. Multinational corporations need to be able to grab our tax dollars and run. And then NAFTA has no labor or environmental standards. It's a race to the bottom with no floor. And it's critical that NAFTA's trade provisions be conditioned on all three countries implementing strong and enforcing labor, wage, and environmental standards. People in the U.S. know NAFTA has cost almost a million jobs. And people know that brings down wages across the economy. However, Mexican real wages in manufacturing are 9% lower than they were before NAFTA. And they weren't a living wage before NAFTA.
The promises of Trump, which by innuendo, certainly only by innuendo, had to do with making better deals for the U.S. working class. What, pray tell, was he getting at? And is there any sense whatsoever in the middle of these oligarchs who have taken over government, these plutocrats, that there's anything affirmative that they are advocating for the working class?
So here is what is very peculiar. The Trump administration's corporate cabinet is packed top to bottom with a lot of people who supported NAFTA, TPP, except when it came to trade, Trump actually picked a change team. And in fact, the guy he listed, he named, who is now in office as his trade representative, a guy named Robert Lighthizer, is a guy who has had a very similar critique to progressives about NAFTA for decades. He believes in putting in labor and environmental standards. he believes in getting rid of the investor rights, the investor state system, the investor offshoring incentive. He believes that there should not be a ban on buy local, buy American, etc. And the real question is, the negotiations have started. Question is, are the other people in the administration going to call the shots, and we're going to see basically the NAFTA renegotiation become TPP 2.0? So like the Secretary of Commerce, that guy Wilbur Ross, he's just been outright frank. He says, yep, we ought to modernize NAFTA. We should update it, and the starting place is the TPP. That's one worldview. And sadly, by the way, that was the worldview of the Obama administration and their trade representatives. There was a bipartisan, NAFTA was negotiated and signed by Bush 1, and Clinton passed it. There has been a bipartisan push for a very retrograde corporate model. And the question is, given most of the Trump administration has these corporate cabinet guys, are those who Trump appointed on trade, who really are for a different approach, are they going to be able to make the differences, or are we going to end up with more of the same? And I think the only way that we can have any influence on that outcome is people who really want to see NAFTA replaced, not tweet, not mod, replaced with something that works for working people. We are going to have to make sure our members of Congress, Democrats and Republicans alike, have that same demand, that the corporate investor rights must go, that the ban on buy local must go, that the labor and environmental standards must be added. We have to make these such mandatory changes that a NAFTA that doesn't have those provisions can't get through Congress. And that is our best insurance as Americans to be able to shape for all of North America what the U.S. government is doing in the NAFTA renegotiations. So at the heart of NAFTA is not so much real trade rules, but those corporate rights I was describing, where literally thousands of multinational corporations get new powers to sue the U.S. government in front of tribunals of three corporate attorneys, can order the government to pay unlimited sums of taxpayer money under claims that any domestic law, court ruling, regulation, environmental, health, safety, you name it, undermines the new rights and powers that NAFTA gives to corporations. Those rules mean our most essential environmental consumer health laws on which our families rely are at risk, but also it means U.S. corporations have those same rights to attack Canada and Mexico and their policies. And when they have those rights, when it comes to Mexico, it's like government paid insurance to leave. It's an incentive to offshore. It's an expense and you'll have to worry about going to a low wage country where if the government tries to raise wages, you can drag them in front of three corporate lawyers and raid the Mexican treasury. If they try and make you not pollute, you can drag the Mexican government in front of a tribunal of three corporate lawyers and make the Mexican tax. And you don't have to ever pay for getting rid of any risk. Normally, if you're going to a low-wage country, you'd buy risk insurance. Instead, you have these extraordinary rights that even go beyond what your insurance would guarantee. It's an incentive to offshore. Lowers the risk premium of offshoring. It creates incentives to offshore when it doesn't even make economic sense. Alternatively, if those rules are out, then we can look to see if some of these other provisions that need to be added or taken out are part of the deal. Hundreds of environmental, consumer, family farm, faith, civil rights, human rights groups all saying no ISDS. It's a common demand, as well as scores of Democratic members of Congress saying the same thing. And the National Conference of State Legislatures, the Association of all the state legislatures, the National Association of Attorney Generals, everyone who cares about the rule of law, who cares about environmental and health safeguards, who cares about fair wages, anyone who's worried about corporate power, which that would basically be everyone across the political spectrum except for the large corporations, we all need to see ISDS taken out. And so when we all look at what the Trump administration does with NAFTA, one super clear indicator for all of us will be, have they done something about these investor privileges and the investor state tribunals? And if they have, as perverse as it may seem, it being the Trump administration, they may be on to actually making some changes that would be useful for people in all three countries. If they haven't done this, that's the red line. Then there's just no hope.
And we are also joined by Gisela Perez, who I said is a lawyer and journalist who works at NGO Derechos Digitales in Mexico. And we'd like to welcome you to the program.
Thank you very much for having me. As I was saying, I completely agree with what Lori has been saying. Trump's narrative is that where American workers have lost, the Mexican economy has gained, but that's not necessarily true either. You know, Mexico's economy has only grown for an average of 2.5% a year since 1994 NAFTA. That's only a fraction of what was needed to provide the jobs that were promised at the time. More than half of Mexicans still live below the poverty line, and this hasn't changed since 1993. There's this whole discourse on how new technologies have actually increased productivity, which is essentially good for businesses, but we have to think that this is also a blow to the workforce. And, well, essentially, just to sum things up, here in Mexico, more than two-thirds, according to recent polls of March, around March or May last year, two-thirds of the Mexican population believe that NAFTA has benefited American consumers and producers, but only 20% consider it has benefited Mexicans in general. So this narrative that Trump has been working on since the election, for the past elections in the United States, is also not true. I dare to question it. And from the coalition that we have built, leftist coalition against NAFTA here in Mexico, we also believe that Trump's racist agenda against Mexicans cannot be free and fair trade. This new treaty is being negotiated behind closed doors. It's only corporations and states that have representation, as Lori has been very well explaining. And why would we believe somebody that has constantly repeated that Mexicans are rapists and drug dealers, and that we have to build a wall where racial subjugation has been a tool for keeping those already in power to make them more powerful? So there is a connection between both debates from my perspective, which we have to take into consideration to consider a new concept of trade justice, which is the respect for human rights as well.
Laura, you want to respond to that?
I think that the Trump administration has itself painted into a corner exactly the way we just heard. Trump has used the most vile, racist, xenophobic language aimed at Mexico and Mexicans. Perversely, what he has said about trade and jobs, he can only deliver on if he makes changes that actually help the Mexican people, as well as working people here. He is now in a situation where he has failed to deliver on most of the things that he promised. Those working class voters who sort of used him as their human Molotov cocktail, not the deplorable racist, not the people who voted for him because of what he said about Mexico and Mexicans, but the people who have had it with the elite political class of both parties, who couldn't stomach Hillary Clinton's status as too close to Wall Street and too close to the original NAFTA, and people who I have talked to, many people who are in labor unions, who said they found Trump repulsive, but they hoped he would shake things up. They had sort of hit the basta moment. They had just had it. For those people, Trump loses them, and the numbers are showing he's starting to, unless he can deliver on some of the things he promised that would make their direct lives better. Well, they ain't coming in health care. That's not happening. And for some people, they're relieved Obamacare didn't get tanked, but he blew so much smoke that people were expecting some miracle. He's not going to make Medicare and Medicaid better, as he promised. So what's left? It's the manufacturing jobs and it's trade. And it's the issue that he brings up every damn time he gets in trouble politically. Well, for him to do what he said he was going to do, bring up wages, create jobs, and bring down the trade deficit, a key component of that is raising wages, labor standards, and environmental standards in Mexico. It is getting rid of the industrial rights.
Yes, totally. There's a very interesting proposal of Bernie Sanders and the leftist senator here that they say raise wages, not walls. And precisely one of the things that Canada has been complaining the most is that they cannot compete against the super low wages that exist here in Mexico. Actually, in the OECD standards, we were the worst rated country in terms of minimum wages in 2016. We pay $14 a day versus $50 a day, which is the average. But one of the problems that labor and trade unions have put forward here in Mexico is also that a minimum protection for labor wages should not be only centered in protecting the rights of the capital, but also protecting workers themselves in terms of their human rights, especially when we connect it to migration or even agricultural issues. We have to take into consideration there's the industry. A lot of arguments have been made pro-creating jobs, not to have created jobs at the industry level, but actually at the agricultural level with local farmers, more than 2 million jobs have been lost in the agricultural field. Taking those two into consideration, one of the claims here in Mexico has been to protect the rural workers, protect the farmers that grow their own food, especially also because of corn, right? We lost our food sovereignty because we are importing. Mexico is one of the top buyers of American corn. We have come to import one of the most important and ancestral production, food production materials. There is even a book, the Popol Vuh, that was dedicated to corn as a sort of deity. So all these three components, migration, agricultural, and labor rights, have to come together to protect not only the enterprises that cannot compete against Mexican low wages, but actually the people themselves that are losing their jobs to big multinationals.
Laura, there was side agreements with regard to labor and the environment that were really never enforced. Is there any possibility that this will come up in the negotiations? And is there any possibility to get strong labor and environmental agreements?
Well, absolutely. They're not going to be side agreements. The U.S. proposal is to have in the core text of the agreement a requirement that countries adopt into their domestic law and enforce international labor standards. And the environmental proposal is much less clear with what the standards will be, with violations being deemed a violation of the agreement. The problem is that is similar to the language that was in the TPP. And we've had a long track record of those, for instance, with the Peru Free Trade Agreement, the Colombia Free Trade Agreement. That mechanism alone does not cut it, because effectively the trade agreement goes into effect. The elite in a country lose all interest in raising standards, improving the safeguards, the human rights, the protections for workers. And then when there are violations, there's a long and drawn-out process where you have a tribunal of trade experts deciding if there's been a violation. And the only case that's ever come to a ruling, which was in the case of Guatemala under CAFTA, Central American Free Trade Agreement, where there's no question there are heinous labor violations in Guatemala. And in that case, the standards were such that the tribunal never found there was a violation. There's no sanction. And workers have died. Unions are being assassinated. This was not a close call case. This is not like a worker safety case. This is a mob of thugs go break up strikes and then drag away the leaders and kill them. But I wanted to go back to the food issue, because I think for a lot of progressive people who might be listening to your show, they think, we're the people who are international. It's Trump and his isolationism that blows up things like the Paris Agreement, the climate agreement. And it's super important for folks to actually know what is in NAFTA. Like the idea of North America coming together under the right rules could be a pull-up agreement that would raise standards and increase protections through the hemisphere. But NAFTA's specific terms set in 1992 in negotiations behind closed doors with corporate advisors specifically are not about free trade and are about putting the thumb on the scale in the favor of the big and the corporate. And the food issue, there is no clearer case. 2 million people, peasant farmers, lost their livelihoods. How can that be? Because at the same time, the U.S. now has a trade deficit of $6.8 billion with Mexico and Canada in agriculture. We had a trade surplus, $2.4 billion before NAFTA. Huge flood of corn comes. It's subsidized. There is no way farmers in Mexico can actually compete against those exports. The increase is literally multiples of 70 times over of exports of corn. But how do we have a deficit? Because the rules allow consolidation in the service sector such that a bunch of the milling and grain trading companies, the meatpacking companies, all had new rights to buy up capacity in Mexico. So not only did 2 million peasant farmers lose their livelihoods, but a lot of small business owners, what was the middle class NAFTA supporters, who had food processing plants and small retail chains who've now come out against NAFTA because it wiped them out, because you have the big agribusiness companies, the meat packers, the grain millers, they moved production to Mexico to try and abuse, to take advantage of these abusive wages and to take advantage of the lack of worker safety in the very dangerous meatpacking industry. And then what they would do is play farmers in Mexico and in the U.S. and Canada off each other. Oh, it's time to sell your cattle. Well, we can get this price in Mexico. What are you going to get in Canada? Oh, Mexican farmers, we can get this price in the U.S. What will you pay us? Racing the farmers down to the bottom, getting the cattle, bringing them over the border, putting them into feedlots there and slaughtering them. The United States now has a trade deficit in beef with Mexico. How is that possible? The U.S. multinational meat packers and feedlots have lock, stock, and barrel moved over the border, polluting water and communities in Mexico, and net manufacturing work, and meatpacking is concerned manufacturing, the actual number of jobs in Mexico now is lower than before NAFTA. Not only the wages lower, so all that's bad, wages lower, but guess what? The price of tortilla, Mexico's staple crop, has actually gone up. Companies in Mexico, U.S., and Canada, in this case, Bimbo, the huge tortilla-making wheat milling company in Mexico, bought up a bunch of capacity, including Wonder Bread, the iconic U.S. terrible white bread. And Bimbo is now the major buyer of wheat and corn, not just from Mexican farmers, but now U.S. farmers, and is playing the same damn race to the bottom game. But then they can price the food whatever way they want. So the price of tortilla in Mexico City since NAFTA have increased 3 times. Wages are down 9%.
And Gisela Perez, Mexican civil society has a platform on the start of the renegotiation of NAFTA. Can you talk about that as well?
And the big demonstration in Mexico City.
Coming back quickly on what Lori was saying, effectively, tortilla is one of our main meals here in Mexico. Corn is one of the main meals. As I was saying, it was considered a deity by ancient ancestral cultures. Also, this brings the point of transgenic seeds and transgenic crops. If we take the chapter of the TPP, via intellectual property, NAFTA would actually protect Monsanto or these big multinationals versus the farmers' rights to seeds. It would prevent farmers, if we protect by intellectual property rights transgenic crops, two things would happen. One, it would prevent farmers to exchange their seeds, their own seeds, making them buy from Monsanto. And two, it would also feed a very large variety of corn. We have a lot of variety of different corn, but it's actually better. It's more resistant to climate change, and it's healthier than the transgenic and genetically modified organisms that we are importing right now, which are also more expensive. So in terms of food sovereignty, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And regarding the demonstration, over between 4,000 and 5,000 farmers, trade unions, workers, and students came together to protest against NAFTA. One of the most vocal, we actually made a document, we read it outside of the U.S. Embassy, and then we went to the foreign minister to actually hand it in. One of the most vocal claims was exactly against the privileging of the big multinational companies instead of rural workers and farmers. There's this question on whether if we should just withdraw from NAFTA and what would the implications be, or whether if we should just replace it. And I think this discussion has a lot to do with class issues here in Mexico. Of course, the highest classes tend to say, oh, this agreement has been good for us and people and benefits free trade. But in that demonstration, what I saw was a lot of rage, a lot of anger, a lot of claims for justice. NAFTA is seen as an unjust as an unjust fair trade deal. We are forming a leftist coalition of civil society, but also trade unions and students that are coming together to protest this trade agreement that since 1994 has affected the most marginalized regions and the most marginalized people in our country. Yeah, and regarding, there's also a big topic regarding intellectual property that we should take into consideration. It's not only the protection of transgenic crops, but also this could impede, for example, the creation of generic medicines in biopharmaceuticals if tomorrow they discover a cure for HIV, cancer, or Ebola. And in Mexico, we must say more than 80% of people consume and buy generic medicines because we cannot afford private patented medicines. And the intellectual property chapter of NAFTA could actually be a matter of life and death for a lot of people that do not have the economical resources to buy medicines from the patented pharmaceuticals.
And we will continue this discussion in the weeks and months that come by getting our good friend Jacela Perez online, and we will do more next time and take a closer look at what is happening in Mexican civil society. And Lori Wallach, Director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, always go to the website. It is really replete with extremely important information, and we've got a lot of work to do as the negotiations continue. A final 30-second comment, Lori and Jacela?
Lori here, and I just want to say the only good thing that I think has come out of NAFTA is the partnerships across civil society with organizations like Derechos Digitales and other of our counterparts in Mexico and Canada, because it really makes so clear that there are people in each of the three countries available to educate, empower, inform, and organize our fellow citizens, residents, friends and family to make sure that either we have a NAFTA that replaces the current damaging one with real rights, or we have no NAFTA. And the hope, the pleasure of the NAFTA is simply the power of the people of North America united to make sure we either get better or we at least stop the damage. And so with that, I will thank you all very much, both the host and Derechos Digitales. You do great work. And I look forward to working with you going forward. And I'm going to lose you guys. I'm going to say bye.
Bye-bye, Lori Wallach. And we, the workers of the world, have nothing to lose but our chains when we unite and fight. Again, Jacela Perez, will be back to you in the weeks and months that come. So much to be said about what's going on in Mexican civil society and the work that your very important NGO does, Derechos Digitales. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.